The next case today is number 211834, Railroad Avenue Properties LLC versus Acadia Insurance Company. At this time, Mr. Grumbach, please introduce yourself for the record to proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. May it please the court, if I may remove my mask. My name is Jerry Grumbach. I'm here for the appellant, Railroad Avenue Properties, and I apologize. I went to the state courthouse today, and that's why I was late. Again, my apologies. To the panel, the gist of this case is the fact that the there was a fire at the plaintiff's location in November of 2018, that the plaintiff within 2 months had an estimate prepared for the replacement cost and code upgrades of some $856,000, that the parties agreed on a replacement cost of roughly $806,000, that the insurance company dispersed $610,000, and the plaintiff is attempting to recoup the nearly $225,000 between the depreciation holdback and the code upgrades. The issue here is that the policy provides that the reconstruction be completed within 2 years. There is no case law in Massachusetts appellate decisions regarding this, so we must look at other states, and we must look at the federal court in Massachusetts.
Don't we just look at the language of the policy?
And the language of the policy states that the construction must be completed within 2 years. Absolutely, that's the way the policy.
And even with the fire, there were still there, even after the fire, I believe there were like 16 months left after that.
Again, this was on summary judgment, Your Honor. The summary judgment standard. This is a case where it's de novo before the court. There was ample evidence that within 2 months, the plaintiff had an estimate far in excess of the replacement cost and code upgrades. That as of July 2019, and I think I had the year wrong originally, which was roughly a year and 8 months after the fire, there was a completed signed contract, which when everything was added in would have been for more than the reconstruction costs, that the plaintiff as of 2 years had paid out $592,000 of the $610,000, and that within the next 11 months past the 2 year provision, he had paid out another $150,000 or so. So the evidence, if read most favorably to the plaintiff, which is what is required on summary judgment, indicated that the plaintiff had a real intent to do the reconstruction. He had moved forward. There were substantial reconstruction issues relating to the basement, the slab, and the columns for support. Those were engineering issues that took several months between the contractor and the town. There was 8 months in which the tenant, Phoenix Expo, and its own insurer, Nautilus, decided that it needed to investigate and maintain the materials on site. If you take the 8 months alone, you add in the 3.5 months of COVID without anything further, that's a year, and that is when the property was completed. So there was a delay of 11 months. Yes, there was. But should there be a forfeiture? That's what this case is all about. even given that language, and I concede to you that the language, when read plainly, states that construction must be completed, but many courts in many states have found otherwise. And that includes Judge Toro in the Vermont Mutual versus Pettit situation. Now, that did not relate to replacement cost coverage. It related to business income loss. But what Judge Toro did is he extended the time period by 27 months, both for the adjustment of the loss and for the litigation. Here, all we're asking is for 11 months. Now, in this case, Railroad Avenue requested an extension. And according to the statute cited by counsel for Acadia, the statute requires 2 years, but the statute, when you read it, Chapter 175, Section 47, Clause 17, provides for 2 years unless the parties by agreement extend it. That's all we're looking for. This is a case which brings in the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. This is a case which brings in the concept of frustration of purpose, which the district court judge did not look at. He looked at the case as if there were an estoppel because the insurance company delayed by a month in its subrogation. That was not what this case is about. He did not look at the other cases, and the one case he focused on was Shree Godfrey, which he had decided. And that case is very different because in that case, there was never a request for an extension. There was never an attempt to rebuild. And 2.5 years after the fire, the insured claimed to have purchased a replacement property, but the evidence indicated that that may have been a sham. So that case is very different than this. This case is much closer to the cases, the numerous cases in different jurisdictions that the district court judge never looked at. And the district court
What is your argument that they have violated the covenant of good faith? I mean, they're hewing closely to the precise terms of the contract, but in doing so, how are you saying they breached the covenant of good faith?
Because, Your Honor, the contract requires, when you read in Chapter 175, Section 47, Clause 17, that the 2 years may be increased by the parties as necessary.
By agreement.
I apologize, Your Honor.
By agreement, and the other side isn't
agreeing. By agreement, right, but there is case law, and I think I've cited a case, it might have been McCarthy, in my reply brief, which indicates that as long as the parties are left to their discretion, such as to extend a guideline, then the question is reasonableness. And in this case, it was not reasonable. Reasonableness, again, Your Honor, is a question of fact. And summary judgment is not proper. There are so many reasons on the facts of this case that the court has to look beyond the plain, bland language of the policy. It is what it is, but this court is guided by Massachusetts precedent, which relates to reasonable expectations. The cases I have cited from other jurisdictions are all based on a reasonable expectation standard. Here, the delays were all caused by third parties. And that's the question here. In a case where third-party conduct applies, why isn't the frustration of purposes or a similar doctrine implicated? We have two Superior Court decisions by Judge Salinger. We have an SJC decision, Precast Concrete, and then there's a federal court decision.
So the defendant presents a different story. They say that it wasn't caused by third-party contractors and that the delay was mostly because of inaction on your client's part.
Correct.
So is it your position then that it's a question of fact to
Absolutely.
Be decided by the jury?
Absolutely. This is de novo. The whole point on summary judgment is to accept the facts from the plaintiff and not to weigh the credibility. That's exactly what the judge did, is he weighed the credibility and he came down as a fact finder. That's not appropriate on summary judgment, and that's unfortunate. So that is the gravamen of his error, along with not recognizing some of the doctrines and limiting the doctrine just to railroad, to just to Acadia or Tri-State, and not considering the actions of third parties. Now, there is a claim for misnomer. I'm happy to address it if the court would like. But misnomer was not raised at the district court. And Federal Rules of Procedure 15B provides that misnomer can be cured by an amendment to the pleadings anytime, even after an appeal. Obviously, the district court doesn't have jurisdiction here. So this court is the one in which we would essentially be filing a motion to amend, and we're doing that right here in making this argument. So I believe that argument's been cured. I'm happy to answer any other questions if the panel has them.
Could you explain how exactly you understand the doctrine of frustration applies to this case?
I do. I think the doctrine is articulated well by Judge Salinger in the Museum Properties case, which is cited in my reply brief. And the point is that a contract is entered into by the parties, and there's no expectation of some sort of event, and that event occurs. So there has never been bargaining about the underlying issue. And in order to recognize that, the court essentially relieves one of the parties of strict compliance with its obligations to recognize that this unforeseen event caused outside of the control of either parties has occurred. And that's what's happening here. The third parties are the tenant and its insurer, the engineering conditions, and COVID. And as a result of that, the...
Didn't the tenant's insurer sign off after about a month?
No, that was Tri-State, which signed off after a month. Nautilus did not sign off until July of 2018, which was eight months after the loss. It might be June. It was either June or July. I had to write a letter, which is in the record, in, I believe, late June of 2018.
So you're saying that because the tenant's presence on the property, because the tenant refused to remove belongings from the property, you couldn't proceed?
We could not demo. We could not demo and begin construction, and then once we did that, there had to be permits granted, there had to be determination of how to proceed, and there was a serious issue as to both the foundation and the columns. In fact, the price would have been higher and the reconstruction would have taken longer had there needed to be a new slab or new columns, but they were able to use what they had and modify some anchor bolts, and as a result of that, it benefited both the insurer and the insured. It was mitigation of damages. It is what any party in a situation like Railroad found itself is obligated to do under Massachusetts law. If the panel has nothing further, thank you so much for your time.
You.
Again, my apologies for being late.
Thank you. At this time, would Attorney Maslach please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, my name is Robert Maslach, and I represent the defendant, Acadia Insurance Company, in this matter. And speaking of what the material facts would be in this case, there's no question of clear policy language requiring the building to be rebuilt within 2 years, and that after 2 years, which was November of 2019, there had been some planning, and for some reason, I guess, but shovels had not been put into the ground yet to rebuild the building. So there's no question there was no substantial compliance or anything, and it hadn't even started to begin construction time. So you know, the condition precedent in the policy to recover the depreciated pullback was, there's no question that it wasn't satisfied. The issue is there some legal excuse for that? Was it excused? Was it somehow waived? Carrier stopped from applying that provision. And the records, my client's view is it's clearly not. Acadia, or the Tri-State's, the actual decision policy, paid the full actual cash value in 3 months of the loss, so they had money There was a brief investigation to see if there was a potential subrogation claim by early December. There was a decision made not to go forward with that. So Acadia was out of the picture at that point. 2 years is a long time to rebuild. There's, I think it presupposes that there would be bumps along the road. But the best evidence is that the insured has created a timeline which the claims excuses its failures to rebuild. But if you look at the dates, there's nothing in the record to indicate why the insured had to wait 9 months to sit down with the builder to even discuss what how to rebuild the building. And then following that, that occurred in August of 2018. They don't reach an agreement as to the scope of what is going to happen until January 2019. Now we're down to 11 months left in the period.
They say that there are facts which excuse the delays. Should that be submitted to a jury?
No, because the trouble is, it's a theory in search of a legal justification. Why? There has to be some basis for why this could be. To put it on Acadia, first, Acadia didn't contribute to any of that. So you have to find some type of legal justification for not complying with the condition precedent. And here, the justification has changed almost every time a brief is filed. Originally, in the complaint, it was waiver, estoppel, and failure of the good faith and fair dealing. In the district court, there was a proof of loss argument and an ambiguity argument. And then I don't believe frustration of purpose was even advanced as a potential justification until this reply brief was filed. So there was a complaint that the trial judge didn't look at frustration of purpose. I would submit that's because it wasn't argued.
Was the COVID issue argued below?
The COVID issue, Your Honor, is just a complete red herring to me because this building was supposed to be constructed by November of 2019.
So it's everything here is pre-COVID. So COVID,
yes,
you should not even.
Suppose it wasn't there was no. Yeah. I would submit if this whole thing happened years later and the insurer just couldn't get steel or just couldn't get the supplies that were required, that would be an impossibility of performance. If that happened, but this was supposed to be completed pre-COVID. I understand COVID probably made it once they started late to finish later, but COVID was just something that was going on.
Well, by the time of the 2 years, they had started late. COVID had not come yet, right? Correct.
Yes. So that 2 year deadline had already passed.
Well, what do you have to say about the tenant's refusal to remove property, delaying the demolition?
There apparently was a problem with delaying the demolition. They could have coerced the tenant to move out early. There's a lot of things that could have or might have happened. But what also could have happened is, during this whole 8 month period, they could have done some planning on that. They could have been ready to go much more. But they waited until that happened before they even sat down with the builder to talk about how options to rebuild. And there's nothing in the record indicating that would have been impossible to do before the 8 month period. And even then, that's 8 months. You still have 16 months to complete the construction. And the record shows that when they did ask for an extension 2 weeks before the deadline was elapsed, I believe there was an indication that it was going to be roughly a 3 to 4 month project. So even after the 8 month issue that they claim was caused by a third party, they still had 16 months to do a 3 to 4 month project. The building is a warehouse. It's not the most complicated structure. They basically, my client had nothing to do with any delay. And I believe that the timeline that they present indicates that they just didn't move with any type of reasonable dispatch to get this building rebuilt. Anyone has any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes argument in this case.